Welcome to the Digiday podcast. I'm Tim Peterson, senior media editor at Digiday. Today I'm talking with Mike Hume. Mike is the editor of Launcher, which is the Washington Post's gaming and esports property that debuted in October 2019. For years, gaming has been bucketed as a niche form of entertainment, but that's been changing over the better part of the past decade. Mainstream celebrities like Drake are streaming themselves playing Fortnite on Twitch, and Twitch streamers like Tyler Blevins, better known as Ninja, are appearing on magazine covers. Gaming journalism has similarly expanded. In addition to long-standing gaming publications like Kotaku and IGN, outlets including The Washington Post, ESPN, and Wired have invested in covering gaming and esports, and their coverage extends beyond console reviews and gameplay tips. Launcher, for example, also covers the business and culture surrounding and inside video games, from the esports competitions that have formed around games like League of Legends, to people holding their weddings in Animal Crossing, to the legal dispute between Apple and Epic Games, which makes Fortnite. So I'm excited to talk with Mike about how gaming media has evolved and how Launcher fits in. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So kind of start with that last point. Like, there's a lot of outlets covering gaming these days and covering it in different ways. How does Launcher fit into the mix?
So what we really tried to get after and to conceptualize before we launched and then subsequently execute on after launch was finding the audience that sort of overlaps the mainstream general audience of like, I've heard of gaming, I'm aware of it. And then the hardcore, more dedicated gaming audience who are really invested in gaming and try and identify some of the issues that they are passionate about and tell those stories in unique ways with real like journalistic rigor, accountability journalism, find those stories and really bring them to light. Because we hadn't seen too much of an investment from mainstream establishments at the outset of our strategy sessions. As you mentioned, ESPN had done it, and they were one of the big sort of inspirations behind our strategy into even conceiving, like, is esports, is gaming as a whole something that we should be doing more about? But a lot of the mainstream stuff that we would see from ourselves at the Washington Post would sort of look at gaming as if it were this, like, you know, they were a foreign correspondent reporting on a tribe in the Amazon that they'd never discovered before, and this is totally different world. And it's just like, no. That's not what we're after. Like, gamers are just people who like video games. That's it. They're doctors. They're lawyers. They're politicians. Like, they're Washington Post journalists. We have an appreciation for gaming, and we didn't want to cover it with this sort of, like, explanatory feel, like, okay, like, we have to explain everything to you. The core audience is there. Like, I grew up on video games. I know a lot about them, but I'm not a hardcore gamer, I wouldn't say. And I think there's an audience around that. And our year one results, I think, in terms of our readership and the feedback we've gotten from the community has been extremely positive. And it's shown that that audience exists and is appreciative of the journalism we're trying to convey to them.
So how do you thread that needle of trying not to, you know, dumb things down for people who are into gaming to feel like, okay, Launcher, I don't need to read that because it's going to be this, these are the links that I'll send to my parents or, you know, older relatives, things like that. But then not like going so in the weeds that someone who's just kind of a casual gamer or is just trying to decide, should I buy the new Xbox or the new PlayStation, that they're just not completely wigged out when they check out Launcher. It's like, okay, none of this makes any sense to me. I'm going to check something else.
It's a tough balance for sure. I think to play off of the metaphor, they're like, go into the weeds, but bring the machete. And what we try and do is let the article topic dictate our approach. If it's about traditional sports owners pouring millions of dollars into an esports league run by Activision and Blizzard, which is one of the biggest software publishing companies, like, that's a story that general audiences will care about and invest in. So we need to explain, by the way, esports is video game competitions organized through a blah, 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 blah. And that's a rote paragraph that we have to put in to just bring along people like, you know, our parents or older readers who, you know, read the print product. But then we'll have articles about aim assist, which is when you're playing on a controller, you're playing like Fortnite with a controller instead of a mouse and keyboard. The controller will have an artificial boost for your aiming. If you get the cursor, the crosshairs near an opponent, it'll lock onto them automatically. It'll pull you right onto it. And a lot of competitive players believe this to be cheating. And I don't think they're wrong, but that's a different story. But for that story, we just go straight at the community. Like, we interview players that are competing in these events, that have opinions that matter, that have, you know, YouTube and Twitch audiences that number into the millions, and get their take on it. And then we talk to scientists about, hey, like, what are the actual technical things that are happening here? Is this cheating? Why is it controversial? And that's a story that, like, my mom will never read. There are some core elements there that make it available to a general audience. But for us, the value there in telling that story is to say, hey, like, we're listening to the community. This is a big topic. We're going to explore it in very deep measure. And we're not going to be apologetic about any of the non-gaming enthusiasts that we're leaving behind.
I mean, you all were doing gaming coverage before Launcher officially launched. You were doing it for, I think, 2 or 3 years.
That's
before
correct,
that, yeah. At the Post. Like, what was that coverage like, and how, to what extent was it different than what you're doing now at Launcher, and to what extent, like, were you able to kind of test out things in that period and then say, okay, this is what will differentiate Launcher?
Yeah, I think a lot of the biggest shift is definitely tonally. We now have the ability with Launcher to do the unapologetic, this is for a hardcore gaming audience, and if you don't pay attention to, you know, the competitive elements of Fortnite or Apex Legends, you're just not along for the ride. Prior to that, we were doing a lot of, like, crossover stories. So it would be traditional coverage areas for the Post, politics, tech, business, health, sports and competition, and applying the gaming perspective. And what we really tried to do with Launcher, and what we'd always wanted to do, was sort of flip that script. Like, we had a lot of the mainstream coverage out there approaching this from a outsider's perspective, and trying to explain it to somebody who's completely uninitiated. And we're doing that to some extent with our early Washington Post pre-Launcher articles. But we really wanted to sort of say, like, look, this is important in gaming, and here's that context. You know, taking aside everything else, you need to understand that when Drake stopped by on Twitch, like, this was a pop culture phenomenon that people were talking about on morning radio shows and CNN the next day. Like, here's what you need to take away from that. And then once we launched Launcher, which is a pun that never will die, I guess. we really wanted to talk about it from a gaming first perspective. Like, so Gene Park and Elise Favis are diehard gamers, have been in covering video games and interested in video games for, you know, since they've been alive, essentially. And they will see themes and stories from games, from cultural events that are just, oh, this is interesting because of this relationship with this other game and this other game publishing studio. And those are the stories that we can tell with Launcher right now that the Washington Post general audience be like, that's neat. What does any of that mean? And I think that gives us access to a whole new audience demographic that is craved really in-depth, rich storytelling, thorough reported stories on their passion, which is gaming.
Yeah, one story that you all did that really stood out to me was World of Warcraft kind of serving as this early model for the pandemic.
I loved it.
It was a great one. It was really interesting because it's like the pandemic was going, that was like really early into the pandemic when that posted.
It was. And the origin story of that article is great. We have a small team on Launcher. We're 6 people. We are small but mighty. And that story came from our video producer, John Elker, who immediately put 2 and 2 together. He's like, actually, like, this is something that happened in Warcraft. We're like, wait, there was a pandemic in Warcraft. And I'm not a Warcraft player, so I was completely unfamiliar with it. And he's like, just trust me, I'll put it together for you. And it was just like, wow, this is amazing. And the great thing about that is, yeah, it's a gaming first story. And if you're familiar with Warcraft, you're really going to appreciate that story. But it's also like, you can put that in the Washington Post coronavirus live blog, and people will see that and be like, whoa, what's this now? And then there's that curiosity gap, and now we're bringing in the general audience. So not only was it just a great story idea from John that was well told, but it really hit that sweet spot for us coverage wise of like a general audience crossing over with a hardcore gaming centric topic.
For a story like that, where it has such a broad appeal and kind of hits all these different intersections, does the distribution strategy for that change compared to like, you know, a launcher story where you're like, you're going deep on aim assist?
Yeah, I think so. It gives us a few more options. I mean, first, one of our biggest benefits, bar none, is just the fact that we're the Washington Post. We have a built-in audience on our homepage that numbers into the millions on any given day. Like, that's a huge asset for us. And so the more stories that have that crossover appeal, the better for us. If we're doing something that's more in the weeds, like the aim assist story is a great example, then it's more organic. We're on social platforms. We're on Reddit. We're on Discord. We're on Twitter. And those are some of the places that we're really trying to ramp up our presence for 2021 and beyond. Now that we've sort of gotten our footing and we've established our voice, we really want to do more outreach and engage with the community and build a loyal launcher readership that's going to say, hey, I got 5 minutes. Let me see what Launcher put up today. Now that we sort of allowed them to, encourage them to visit, and now that people know we exist.
What's the Launcher readership look like right now? Like, who's the core audience here?
It's varied, and it's great. So we're actually about to launch a study on the readership survey to sort of find out some more demographics behind it. But by and large, it's people that are really invested in gaming, that, you know, this is something that is more than just, oh yeah, I play Madden in the dorm on the weekends. It's something that they have long-term engagement with a title or titles in gaming. And people that want to engage with some of the deeper subtext of games, like whether it's the art, the cultural phenomenon, the competitive scene. It's sort of that next layer down from entertainment product. It's like, okay, I appreciate, you know, Star Wars as a movie, but now I'm into Star Wars, the universe. And you know, those are the sort of readers that we want to engage and serve, because that's the stuff that we find really interesting to tell. Those are the interesting stories about how certain games get made, where certain character origin stories came from. Those are the really fun stories that we like to, nerd out on ourselves.
And I imagine like the host is able to see like, oh, X percent of Launcher's audience like doesn't read the rest of the post, or like are super light post readers. Are you able to see how incremental your audience is to the post?
Yes, we are. We have those metrics.
What are those numbers?
I'm not prepared to share those at this time. I'm probably going to get smacked by my PR associates if I were to do that. But suffice it to say that the Launcher audience, by and large, is a new one to the Washington Post. This is not a readership demographic that we have had prior to this. And we're extremely proud to be bringing that readership to the Post, because gaming as a whole is an underrepresented subject area. I think it warrants a lot more attention than it receives, because I think people, you know, like to sort of shuffle it off to the side as a niche hobby, like you mentioned. And it's really not. It's a massive industry. There's massive implications between the people involved, the money involved. It warrants the coverage that we're prepared to give it. And I'm happy to see that our early readership numbers, our early traffic numbers, not only sort of exceeded our early expectations for what we thought we might be able to generate, but is also bringing a new readership to the Post.
And is that something you need to be like thinking about and staying on top of, just how incremental Launcher's audience is to the broader Post audience, and also to what extent like those people then become Post subscribers, or at least regular Post readers? Because it seems like a challenge for something like Launcher could be, okay, how do we make sure that we're not kind of the satellite within the Post that then could get excised by the Post at some point? And we just saw ESPN shut down its esports division.
Yeah, no, obviously those thoughts are, you know, top of mind. I think our approach has always been more of, we think we're going to connect with the hardcore gaming audience, because we're writing for ourselves in many ways. Like, Gene and Elise understand the audience because they are the audience. I think our concurrent challenge is making sure that the Washington Post readership understands the importance of gaming, and for the reasons I mentioned before about just the sheer money and resources going into the industry, and some of the topical overlap with traditional coverage areas of the Post. I really think that the pandemic has sort of expedited the awareness process of gaming. Like it is constantly in a news cycle now. Esports had a lot of opportunities to backfill for traditional sports programming that was absent because of the various league shutdowns. And now we're going to see if they can capitalize on it. Can they make the most of these opportunities and translate that opportunity of invisibility into a substantive broadcast contract? Those are the stories that we want to follow with Launcher and bring to the Post. And I think those are the stories that, like, they will translate to in a general audience once the general audience becomes aware of, like, oh, this is a thing that, like, my kid watches Overwatch League. Oh, I'm curious about this now, and, you know, how player contracts work. I mean, one of the most interesting stories I think we told initially, I want to say it was our first month after launch, we interviewed the mother of an esports player just about, like, what it's like to be a parent of an esports athlete. Like, what are the considerations? Like, did you consider pulling them out of school? In this case, they did. Is college still on the table? Is it not? Is this, are you happy with the conditions that the team is providing? Those are issues that, traditional sports families that are sending their kids to colleges have to deal with. And I think it really is a lot of similarity between various, dynamics like college sports and esports, that if you really look closely, they're fascinating issues that the only barrier to entry is, oh, it's gaming and it's esports. And once you sort of come to terms with, okay, well, it's just competitive video games and this is a video game, like, it's really easy to see the appeal and the fascination. And I think that is sort of where we stand to have the most growth, when we can bring that mainstream general audience over to esports and realize and help them realize, look, the topics and the stories are universal in their appeal. They're good stories. They're human stories. The only thing you have to get comfortable is the fact that there's an E in front of the word sports, that gaming and Twitch streaming is the same as any kind of reality programming. It executed a little bit differently.
And I mean, this year, I feel like it feels like gaming's really grown even more. Just people are isolated at home. What are you going to do? One thing is play games. Also, it can be nice just if you're dealing with anxiety or everything that folks are dealing with this year. You just want to kind of take your mind off. How did any of that then, like, factor into what you saw in terms of, like, who your readers are, the types of stories they're interested in, or just, like, your coverage strategy?
Yeah, so less so from the strategy standpoint. The stars aligned, and it was a silver lining to a, absolutely terrible phenomenon. But the opportunity that we had is in, and I'm going to embarrass her, but she can get over it, is with my mom. Like, she's into VR now, which is, like, so wild. Like, she wanted a way to get outside to experience, like, not being locked in their Florida home. I told her about the Oculus, and, she fought Darth Vader, playing Vader Immortal. And she was like, this is, like, wild. I've never experienced anything like this. And she's like, you need to get this for me for Christmas. And I was like, okay, all right. So so we have a lot more opportunities like that now, because that audience is broader, because there is, spending in gaming is way up. And I think the biggest thing, and this speaks to the long-term opportunities here, is there's a realization by more people that gaming is communal. It's not this isolated experience where you're sitting in your basement by yourself with the lights off and playing a game and just zoning out. More and more, gaming is becoming a communal event, like a weekend golf match or tennis match or poker game, where it's just like, hey, let's hop on, play Warzone together, guys. Like, let's get together and talk that way. Or we're going to play Among Us and, on the Zoom call or something like that. Gaming really does offer a lot from a communal standpoint now, with online multiplayer and co-op modes. It's so prevalent in so many games. I think that's the real opportunity here, is to show people, like, gaming isn't what you think. It's just like anything else. It's just rather than playing tennis, you're playing, you know, Call of Duty or Among Us or Fall Guys. And I think that is going to be sort of the lasting audience expansion impact, is that people realize, like, oh, like all these stigmas and stereotypes I associated with this might not necessarily be true. And I think kids already realize that. It's just the people sort of my age and older realizing, oh, yeah, it's the same as any other thing. It's just with a video game.
I imagine there can be like some stigmas or stereotypes that do prove to be true. Like gamers, I think, get a reputation for being it being a very insular community, and not necessarily always being welcoming to noobs. Launcher was kind of was basically a noob when you all launched. Like, was that something you all had to kind of deal with? Like, okay, how do we get people who are into gaming to be willing to give us a try and to not come across as the Steve Buscemi "Hello, fellow kids" meme?
Yes, no, exactly that meme. Exactly like that. I think I might have actually put it on one of our early strategy documents. It was just like the opposite of this. But it really is a concern because, you know, just like anyone, the gaming audience wants to be valued. I think there is definitely a chip on the shoulder. When I was at ESPN, this is a good parallel. When I was at ESPN, I worked on the NHL a lot. And when the ESPN dropped the NHL rights, it was like, ESPN hates the NHL, which couldn't have been further from the truth. Like, if you ever worked on the Bristol campus, 90%, well, that's probably high, but like a vast majority of people at least understand and like the NHL, and there are a lot of super fans up there. And it was just because the audience felt disrespected by ESPN, and we had to sort of convince them, hey, like, we're into the NHL too. Like, I'm a huge hockey fan. And we're going to give you the stories that you care about, and we're going to cover this in a way that, you know, even your local beat writer isn't going to cover it, and try and win you back by showing we appreciate you, we understand what you're interested in, and we're going to go give it to you and ask the questions you want us to ask. So that really shaped our approach with Launcher and trying to handle that dynamic, where it's just like, look, we get it. We're not going to be the Kool-Aid guy breaking down the wall and being like, the Washington Post has come, gamers rejoice, now you have a mainstream outlet. Like, no, we got to earn that. Like, that's what a lot of our focus was in year one. And that's why, you know, we're so fortunate to have Gene and Elise, because they understand the audience, again, because it's them. It's what they want to read, and, you know, therefore it's what they want to write. And we're fortunate that the rest of our staff sort of has those same roots. Like Joe Moore, our art director, just does some wonderful illustrations and wonderful graphical work for our stories. And John, who I mentioned before, you know, same thing. He's a core gamer. He's been playing forever. And that translates into our videos. Mikhail Klementov, who's my other editor, same thing. Like, they've been playing games their entire lives. They appreciate the audience. They've been, you know, in the situation where they've read stories where they feel talked down to, and they don't want that experience, and they don't want to be guilty of it either. So, you know, it's been a conscious effort, but it's been one that's been fairly easy to navigate because of who we are and who's on the team. I've been really pleased with the reception we've gotten so far from a number of other media outlets and the industry as a whole. There's really no higher praise than when people say, hey, no one's doing what you guys are doing. Like, that makes my heart skip a beat. Like, I'm so happy when I hear that. So we're going to make sure that we keep doing it now. And now that we've got a year under our belt, I think we're more comfortable at it. And hopefully we can, you know, win a few more people over to Launcher on a regular basis, and, you know, make them Launcher fans and, you know, community members.
Back to like kind of this community idea. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, like, when we were talking about the World of Warcraft pandemic story, how like you weren't into World of Warcraft. That also seems like it could be something of a challenge, where I feel like in gaming, especially in esports, it seems like people are really into a game or like a set of games and not into other kinds of games, especially like in the days where, well, I guess it's still the case, you have games that just aren't available on certain consoles, mm-hmm. or other devices. Animal Crossing, everyone seemed to get into, mm-hmm. But then like League of Legends seems way more specific. How does that then limit what you're able to or willing to cover?
Yes and no. I mean, one of the sort of the benefits, I guess, of having a small team is you can't get to everything. So you don't try. And what we've really tried to do is let the story dictate, you know, what we're going to cover. Is it an interesting story? Yes or no? So, and then that's led us to a variety of games. Like we know, like you meant, actually, I don't think it's come up yet, but you know, Cyberpunk 2077 is a huge anticipated release. It comes out on December 10th, I believe, unless it gets delayed again, which I don't think it will this time. That's a story we know there's massive interest in. It's been talked about ad nauseum, you know, for years now, you know, involved Keanu Reeves. But we'll tell a story. We know we're going to cover that. But aside from that, if there's just an interesting story about a game, an independent game we haven't heard of, we talked about one today, which I'll keep slightly under wraps. But, you know, it's just about the art of a game. And it's a game I guarantee you most people have never heard of. But it's just a fascinating story and how this evolved and became, you know, something more than this person's original career. So I think we let the story and the journalism sort of guide us there. Is it a story we want to read and hear more about? And we let that sort of lead the way. I think, as you mentioned, it's folly to try and write a story or even just have a site that tries to cater to everyone. You have to realize that the audience is super invested in specific properties and very segmented. Like you never try to write this story is for sports fans. And when you do that, like you're failing before you even begin. So I think for us, it's just a recognition of that, knowing that certain stories are going to resonate with certain communities and not at all with others. What platforms certain stories are going to excel on, whether it's social and community-based sharing, or it's just a front page of the WashingtonPost.com audience story. And I think that's how you really have to think about it, and that's what we've been trying to do.
It's like baseball. Reading any baseball articles have gotten really challenging for me over the past few years because it's just like, I don't know all these acronyms, or there are too many acronyms in ad tech that I'm dealing with on a daily basis. I don't need them in sports as well.
Oh, you're not up on VORP and WAR? Come on.
God, it's too much. That's basketball's nice. Give me, you know, win, loss, points, rebounds, and I'm good. Video. So, in I think it was April of this year, you guys launched a live show on YouTube. What's the video strategy, and how is it different than the articles that you guys are publishing?
So video is a work in progress. What we've identified early on is that the audience around gaming is really into video. The question now is how we meet that demand and provide something original for the space. I think there is no shortage of content providers out there. So the question then becomes, okay, what stories are we able to do, and how can we produce them in a way that's going to gain traction? Launcher Live was a great way to do that. And we had a good run there. Through a confluence of other circumstances, largely involving just an absurd amount of news in the year of 2020, we had to scale that back just because, you know, we're still a part of the Post at the end of the day. And, you know, when the world is literally on fire, you need to cover that first. We prioritize our assets accordingly. But Launcher Live gave us a platform where we could engage with a lot of the high-profile figures in the gaming industry and people who hardcore fans of gaming know and love. And that's really what we want to get to going forward, especially with video. Gene Park and Elise Pfaff, I mean, I keep saying their names, but they're great. I love working with them. They really understand and engage well with these figures because they understand the right questions to ask that are like not these generic, you know, cereal box back type questions and answers. Like they know how to cut to the chase and ask that next level question that a fan of I don't even know Mass Effect is going to be like, oh yes, I need to know about that. And that's where we're going to be able to, I think, really sort of ingratiate ourselves with our video audience going forward. We really want to ramp up our YouTube offerings and our in-house video in the coming year. We really want to get into streaming. I think streaming is an absolutely wonderful platform that is accessible. It just is so accessible to users and streamers alike, and really helps us show, would help us showcase what we can do well, which is be relatable, you know, show that, hey, like, we're gamers too. We play these things a lot. We invested a lot of time and hours into them in our youth and as, you know, recently as, you know, last night. So you come hang out and talk with us. John has already done some great work as far as synchronizing some of these videos as standalones, in addition to complements to existing written stories.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Warcraft one that he did, mm-hmm. like, there was a video version of that that I was mm-hmm. able to watch in addition to reading to it and see what corrupted blood looked like, what this pandemic looked like, which was terrifying when I saw that back in the spring and started projecting. On the video set, you mentioned, like, you've scaled back the live show, but you guys, mm-hmm. it seems like you all have kind of picked up on the YouTube channel, like, posting a bit more. There was, I think like a Welcome to Launcher's YouTube channel that just went up, like, in October. Mm-hmm. There was a video in which Gene and Elise kind of go back and forth between Xbox and PlayStation. There's also one on, like, Assassin's Creed, which I watched and then was troubled to learn that Assassin's Creed 3, which is the only version of that game I've played and actually enjoyed, is reviled, which
okay, I'm sorry.
Now I need to revisit my taste. What all are you thinking about for video right now? Because it seems like you should be doing plenty. Like, gaming, I think, is still the most popular category on YouTube. So it mm-hmm. seems like it would all be teed up for Launcher to be doing a lot in video right now.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, that's the exciting part for us. So John has a lot of work cut out for him because he's our video person. So he's asked to do pretty much everything when it comes to production. And the challenge in the pandemic era is, like, okay, like, if one person's capturing it, the footage, and sending it to John, like, just the logistics of sending a file, massive file size is a challenge. So the answer is we could and should be doing a lot, and we want to be doing more. I mean, there's so much with these next gen consoles that we've talked about. And then after the fact, like, that should have been a video. We should have done that. Like, you know, what I think we need to, we and others, in media as a whole need to sort of get out of their heads is, like, what constitutes an acceptable video on a platform like YouTube? Like, there's a video of somebody just holding down the buttons on a PS5 controller and showing how they vibrated to different guns on the new Call of Duty, and it had 1 million views. It's genius. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly the content that people want to see, because they don't have the PS5 yet. They don't have the new Call of Duty game. They've heard about how the console and the controller are supposed to interact with these games, but now they can see it. I think the video was 1 minute long, and it just had, like, very basic fonts. Like, you know, hats off to that person, because that's a stroke of genius, and it, you know, it deserved to go viral. And that's the stuff that we have the potential to do, and we have the resources to do. We just need to get going and doing it. And, like, honestly, you know, 2020 got in the way of our grand ambition. So we're hoping 2021, for everyone's sake, but also ours, is a little bit tamer. And John can focus a little bit more on Launcher going forward, which I know he's excited to do. We're excited to have him working a little bit more closely with us.
Why are you all starting with YouTube as opposed to Twitch, which just so happens to be owned by Amazon, which just so happens to be owned by Jeff Bezos, who just so happens to own The Post?
So we never really leaned into that, and we were always very cognizant of anytime we write about Amazon or Amazon's ill-fated gaming ventures so far, with the exception of Twitch, that we disclose that Bezos does own The Post. It's an easy alignment, and Gene streams independently on Twitch by himself. He has his own channel there, and I think Mikhail might as well. It just sort of evolved that way. We were doing YouTube videos anyway. So we were doing another live show for The Post on YouTube at the time. So it sort of evolved through, like, existing properties. But I mean, I think we'd like to be like to be in both. We'd like to be. I don't think there's a reason we're not going to sign an exclusivity deal. I don't think. If we are, I'd like a cut of that. that Tyler Ninja money, Ninja Blevins money. So. Yeah. I think it's mostly been happenstance more than anything else. The post as a whole has been on Twitch previously and continues to stream every once in a while around politics mainly. But I think we'd like to – we have nothing against Twitch. It's just we happen to be doing it on YouTube.
We've been talking about like when Launcher launched because, as you said, we have to keep using those words together.
It's a binding contract.
That you all kind of like had this opportunity, like low-hanging fruit differentiation of, okay, we can kind of bring gaming to the masses in a mm-hmm. way and bring them, not even bring gaming to the masses, bring them into gaming or help them as they're coming into gaming. But like since then, we've seen Wired launch a gaming mm-hmm. section. Bloomberg is covering gaming, but it's Bloomberg, so they're covering it from a business perspective. And then like over the past few years, like Polygon has mm-hmm. kind of been going the other way, where Polygon launched in the early 2010s as a gaming publication, and now they're kind of more culture and entertainment, like a bit broader. How does your kind of coverage strategy, does it need to it has to evolve, everything has to evolve, this is media, if you don't evolve you're at risk of dying. How does your coverage have to evolve though now, given that like you're not the only one covering gaming from kind of this lens anymore?
Sure. I mean, for right now, I don't think that's required yet. I think what we're doing is still relatively new, is relatively original. I welcome other mainstream, people and outlets getting into gaming coverage, because I think it brings awareness to the topic overall and makes people more interested in, hopping on Google and searching for some of these topics. And I think that's an area that we excel at as the post. So I'm obviously mindful of it, but I don't think throughout my career, I've never been one to sort of let the competition dictate our own course and our own strategy. I think more than anything, we're just going to focus on continuing to innovate, try and stay very closely tuned to what these communities want to read about, what the mainstream audience is curious about, and how we can serve as a bridge in that fashion. That's what I'm mostly concerned with, and doing really good quality work. And I think the results sort of will speak for themselves. I think you mentioned that evolution is inherent and an absolute necessity, and I totally agree. I tend to think a lot of the most successful evolutions are very incremental. It's the ones, it's not where you suddenly grow a third limb. It's, your pinky toe slowly fades away until you don't need it anymore. That's my biology metaphor for the day, I guess. But I think we just try and do the best job we can as far as reaching our audience and serving our audience and doing our jobs at a high level. And I don't really worry too much about, we need to be doing X, Y, or Z just now. Like, I see areas for growth, videos one, like we discussed. But I don't see any need to sort of wholesale pivot anytime in the near future right now.
Mike Hume, appreciate you taking the time. Enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Take care.
And thank you for listening to the Digiday podcast. Please don't forget to share this episode with someone who you think would enjoy it. You can even rate us on Apple Podcasts if you like. And we'll be back next week with another episode.